Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Joe and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thanks for joining us today. When you have a chance, do me a favor, do me a solid, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2025 Best Buy Picks. Also, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage, though you should probably just subscribe. All right, in studio for a lot of weeks in a row, Jill Simonello, managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus Talk.
You can't get rid of me.
No. You're like Velcro lately. You're just always here. North American Car of the Year juror, which is a handy thing to talk about in a moment, and
yes,
a prolific freelancer. Let's just start with that. We finally can stop talking about North American Car of the Year for a year.
For maybe about 6 months.
All right.
And then we'll start talking about the qualified and the semifinalists.
Too many steps.
Too many steps
for public consumption.
Just a couple steps.
All right. But we have winners.
We do have winners.
Do tell.
So the car of the year was the Honda Civic Hybrid.
I haven't driven this yet.
It is an exceptional powertrain.
That is what I keep hearing. And for people who don't know, this is not a conventional hybrid. We can talk about what this means later, but it's a serial hybrid.
Yes.
Basically, 95% of the time or so, the electric motor is powering the car and the gas engine is powering the electric motor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons why that's efficient. But anyway.
It is great.
It is new tech for the U.S.
I had the base sport trim when I drove it in the hatchback, and just I fell in love with it.
What did that cost?
I want to say it was right around $30,000.
Right around $30,000?
Okay. Yeah.
And what else we got winner-wise?
So for the truck of the year, we have the Ford Ranger. And that is completely redesigned for the 2024 model year. And they upgraded the interior materials. They redesigned, you know, the exterior. They added a Raptor, you know, Ranger Raptor trim to it. So lots of cool upgrades to that as well.
Is it bigger?
So in terms of a midsize truck, midsize trucks never really change size. Because the goal with a midsize truck is to be able to fit in a garage.
I guess I sort of thought that the Ranger was on the small side of the vehicles in that class.
They're all pretty much...
Or maybe the Frontier is smaller.
Nah, they're all pretty much standard size.
Okay.
To fit in your garage.
All right.
The Ranger Raptor is certainly wider.
Yeah.
And I have a really funny video. I'll have to share the link with you. Where I take it around Chicago to see where it will fit.
It would be funny if you, like, knocked over stuff.
I did not knock over stuff, but
yeah,
I will tell you,
that would make the video funny.
I had to stick my head out the window parking in my garage to make sure the fender flares didn't hit.
And you didn't knock off your head.
And I did not knock off my head.
Because that would temporarily be funny, and then we'd all be sending you cards.
Would you?
I don't know.
Probably
a card.
A card.
I can't afford flowers.
Well, if I knocked off my head, you'd be sending them to my husband.
All right, so we have Ranger and Civic. That's right.
Yeah, because I would be dead.
And he's not really into flowers.
He's not.
So.
He is not.
I'm not sending anything.
No.
Sorry about your loss.
Yeah, thanks.
And one more?
A utility vehicle of the year, and that went to, and I don't know that anybody was really surprised about this, but the Volkswagen ID. Buzz.
Yeah, it's supposed to be great.
It is great.
You guys weren't put off by the price.
So here's the thing. The
you guys, the voters.
The voters. Well,
yeah.
So there's several areas that you have to look at in judging, and price is just one of those things. But there's also, like, moving the needle, the wow factor, the user interface, you know, the design. So and there's a lot of things that go into this, and so that is just one factor that maybe would have, like, caused a bit of a ding, but not enough of a ding.
One of the interesting things, too, about this, and we had Mark Gillies of Volkswagen mm-hmm. on the show, and he frankly said that they weren't really intending for this to be a volume vehicle.
No.
So with that in mind, it's more of a premium boutique vehicle. I mm-hmm. guess you can accept a little higher price.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying.
But you have to think about the fact that there aren't many three-row EVs out there. You have the Rivian R1S. You have the EV9.
Yeah.
The IONIQ 9 from Hyundai is coming, but it's not out yet. And then you have this ID. Buzz. And that is essentially it, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting how impractical early EVs were. Like, why were all of them premium sedans for a while?
because they were cheaper to make?
I don't know. But like the Lucid Air is a tough sell.
It is, but Gravity is coming. So we might see that. I feel like I heard they were starting production on that. So, I mean, maybe we'll see that this year.
The Gravity?
Yeah.
I think there's pricing.
Yeah.
So I think it is a 2020, or maybe it's a 2026 model, but we should see it soon.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have North American Car of the Year winners, and
yes.
We don't have to talk about this again for 6 months?
Maybe.
All right, marking my calendar. Next week,
yes,
we have two guests.
Yes.
Jennifer Moran from the Chicago Automobile mm-hmm. Trade Association. We'll be talking Chicago Auto Show, mm-hmm. which is right around the corner.
Yes.
And then your Abell Rally partner,
yes,
Kristen, is on to talk about some Toyota technology that's very interesting.
Yes.
But Toyota has announced separately, she wrote an article for Popular Science mm-hmm. that's very good. But Toyota's announced separately that one of the things that they need to do to step up Lexus as a premium brand is improve structural rigidity.
Okay.
In a way, we've talked about small door openings on premium vehicles,
yeah.
for example. This is sort of in that particular line of tech that we're talking about, and hopefully they don't make the doors really small. but when you talk about Mercedes or Audi or BMW, mm-hmm. you're talking about vehicles with extremely rigid architectures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're looking at, and what's what we're talking about here. So that should be a good conversation.
Yes.
All right. I just heard this. I don't want to get into it too deeply right now, but if your kid wants to be a mechanic,
mm-hmm.
tell them to do that.
Okay.
There is a profound shortage of good automotive techs in the U.S., and we're losing 67,000 of them a year.
Wow.
They're retiring.
Wow.
Yeah, they need to be replaced. So it's a good job.
And it pays well.
It pays very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the downside is the education is expensive and the tools are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I heard and read is that there are dealerships so desperate for new techs, they will help you finance your tools.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a thing.
Okay.
What else do I have here? We just talked about this. The Tesla Model Y,
mm-hmm.
the redesigned version of that is now on sale.
Yeah, we...
squinty eyes.
Well, and it's got a light bar. The trend yeah. for 2025 seems to be a light bar across the front. And
yeah.
On Blue Sky, which we are both members of...
Uh-huh. Follow me.
And me. I feel like I posted the Car and Driver primer on this and was just like, is it just me or does it look like a Toyota Prius now?
I think it looks good, actually. Also, we're not going to see this for a while. These are the new Model Ys coming out of Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
so primarily for sale in China and the Pacific Basin there.
Yeah.
All right, real quick, to Afila.
Yes.
Honda Sony Mobility.
Yes.
They've got vehicles coming out soon, very expensive, low volume, and as is the trend, they're going to avoid dealerships and go direct to a direct-to-consumer
right.
model.
Right.
So I never saw Honda in a position to really irritate its dealers, but...
now they're going to irritate its dealers.
Yeah, more lawsuits there. All right, I'm going through these quick. Are you ready? Because you know why.
I do know why.
In studio, after the
yes.
break, we talked to Steve and Johnny.
Yes.
So we want to get to that as soon as possible. You drove
the
Chevrolet Traverse.
Yes.
Chevy's large-ish midsize crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Do tell.
So I had the Z71 trim and had it last week, drove to the Detroit Auto Show and back in it. And
that's a good test.
It was a really good test, especially since I was dealing with whiteout conditions on the way home. And I want to say that it is incredibly comfortable. Like, I give Chevrolet and General Motors in general a hard time because their seats are usually really firm and icky. And they did a good job of making these seats pretty comfortable.
A thing I have never noticed.
Yeah.
But I consume three times more planet than you do, so...
So you do have more planet space
yeah.
than me. But so the seats were really comfortable. And I thought it felt really good and well planted, especially in snowy, icy, bad weather conditions. So, I mean, overall, I really liked it. The third row is very tight and a little claustrophobic.
I'm surprised to hear that because this is one of the largest crossovers in its class.
Well, and
right on the longest wheelbase.
Yeah, and I mean, the other part of the problem is the third row window is like this teeny tiny triangle in the back, and so that just adds to the claustrophobia of the situation. And you can negotiate with a second row passenger to move their seat forward so you have a little more leg room, but if they are tall and they've got that seat in the far back position, I can just fit behind it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm stunned by that.
So, I mean, the third row is less than ideal, but good for kids and carpools. The second row seats in my vehicle had captain's chairs, were really comfortable, separate climate controls, controlling not only the air fan, you know, the fan speed, but also the actual temperature, which I really liked for the person who's always cold.
And this now has the single screen, right, that everyone is trendily doing?
Yes-ish. So it has like a, it has like a piece of glass that goes all the way across, but then there's like a screen on top of the screen for the gauge cluster.
So it's like, I guess I should say there's a housing. It looks hip, but maybe it's not entirely as hip as it should be.
You know what? I think it's pretty hip. I mean, so there's like a maybe a housing that goes all the way across. Then you've got like the screen that goes on top of the housing, and then you have the screen for like Apple CarPlay and infotainment. And the infotainment system fills out the screen really well. I think, you know, because this is not an electric vehicle, it does have Apple CarPlay. And one of the things that General Motors has done is they've made it very easy to navigate between the in-car system. So your radio, your audio, your phone, your apps and things like that, and then Apple CarPlay, because there's a top navigation where you can kind of, you know, go between all of the things. So they've simplified their infotainment system and they've made it work really well.
Which is interesting because it's always been good. The GM infotainment stuff's usually been pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Good use of colors, really large icons, stuff like that. So three pieces of bad news here. One of them I need you to fill me in on.
But okay.
One, the LS version is gone. So the base price is effectively almost $2,000 higher for this year. Two, OnStar, no longer free for 3 years, so you got to pony up for that right away. And three, there are some powertrain issues I keep hearing about.
I don't know that I've heard about the powertrain issues.
I had read many, many, many places that the new 2.5-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine, not nearly as smooth as a V6.
Oh, well, if you those kinds of issues, yes, I can attest to the fact that that engine is not... It is not great. I mean, it gets you where you need to go, but it's like, it's really
everyone did, like Toyota did this. The Toyota 3.5 liter V6 is one of the smoothest things on the planet. Mm-hmm. And they replaced it with that 2.5 turbo hybrid, whatever. It's good. It's efficient. It's strong.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to miss V6s. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, but so we talked about the Mercedes, the AMG 63, you know, a couple weeks ago that has a four-cylinder engine. They can be made well. This one is not made well.
Well, I don't even know if it's a problem with the engine or it's a problem with software, and they haven't got the engine to play nicely with the transmission. This is a new transmission for GM they're going to. They're getting away from their old 9-speed to a new 8-speed.
Yeah.
And it's not playing. This could be entirely fixed by software.
Yeah, fingers crossed, because it is a little clunky.
I have a hard time believing that General Motors just built a bad engine. I think it's more the engine's being used poorly.
It could be.
All right. That's all I got. How about you?
Well, let's see. I was pulling up the Monroney. So the base price for this vehicle was $47,600. And then when you add in some really pricey options.
And you said that was the Z71.
Yes.
So the off-roady.
Yes.
The off-roady version of this vehicle.
But this also added the enhanced driving package, which included Super Cruise and a 3-year subscription to that. And then it had...
And the Bose stereo.
Yes.
And leaving out the most important part here.
And the rear camera mirror and the driver confidence package with the around view camera and things like that. So you add all of that in and the as tested price was $54,900.
Yeah, midsize crossovers are just now more than 50 grand.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah.
I remember like when they all tried to start around 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No
mass. Those days are gone.
Yeah.
All right. Basically you liked it?
Basically I liked it.
Okay. You have any idea what your fuel economy was like on the highway?
I don't, because one of the weird things that Chevrolet has done is you have to go into the infotainment system to be able to access your trip information, and I was annoyed by that.
I always feel like they just hate auto journalists because you can never find the trip odometer anymore, and you can't find fuel economy.
No, but they don't have it in the behind-the-wheel cluster, which is a natural place to put it.
Yeah, that's where you want it.
That's where you want it.
Unless you have some hybrid or hybrid vehicle where they just want to tell you all that information all the time.
Yeah.
And you can't get rid of it.
That is true.
All right. Good car.
Good car.
Good car, not great car. Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Steve and Johnny. Cool. All right, stick around.
questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Did you know the Chicago Auto Show offers much more than just cars? Every year there's something new to experience, and 2025 is no different. This year, take a thrilling ride on one of two indoor mountain climbs with either Ford or Jeep and decide who conquers the challenge best. Come experience the latest electrified vehicles on two indoor tracks where you'll feel the power and performance. Take a trip into the national parks and adopt a dog with Subaru. Dream about a lavish lifestyle at the Supercar Gallery. Get behind the wheel to test drive vehicles on city streets. And don't miss new exhibits at the show, like Overlanding Chicago or the Family Zone. Join us for an indoor run, craft beer tasting, career day, and so much more. It's an experience you won't forget. The Chicago Auto Show, February 8th through the 17th at McCormick Place. Find out more and buy tickets online at chicagoautoshow.com.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. Jill, how's it going?
This is only like the second time maybe you've asked me that. Good.
I'll ask you more.
I'm eating gluten-free cookies right now.
They smell good.
That I made.
That you made.
That I made.
You made them for our guests.
Yes.
We'll be talking to Steve and Johnny in one moment. Give me a hand.
Do I have to?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to talk about Blue Sky and X?
Not a lot.
Okay.
But I'm on both.
Okay.
I'm on both. Join the conversation. I am Car Guy Tom on both. The Car Spotter hashtag is part of my existence.
Part of your existence.
When I test drive cars on Saturdays, I specifically go out to look for cars that are strange, weird, odd, rare.
Okay.
And I post pictures of them with the Car Spotter hashtag. And on Saturdays, I usually do a set of four.
Okay.
The Saturday collection.
The Saturday collection. Got it.
All right. In studio with us, our good friend Steve and Johnny. You guys, legends in Chicago, late night legends. How long did your late night show go? Was it 25 years?
27.
27 years.
Mm-hmm. But who's counting?
In one time slot. Is that a record? That's got to be a record.
Probably.
Certainly for Chicago.
Continuously. Is,
yeah, great show. People loved you. And then they love you still because your show is now...
On Saturday nights.
Yes. And I am honored to be a part of that on a regular basis. Thank you. But tell us about your show and how people can hear it.
They can hear it on WGN Radio, 720 AM or online. And it's on from 9 at night until 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a late Hawks or some other sports thing that happens that makes us show up later.
And our show is also podcasted, and you can hear that a couple of days later.
Which is very cool, and people should do that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun.
By the way, if I sound a little befuddled, it's because for the past couple minutes, I've been sitting here ruminating about a headless Jill probably wearing a cape on a horse and holding a pumpkin.
Yeah.
The image is just stuck in my brain right now.
That's pretty much what I see when I think of Jill.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Ichabod Jill.
Yeah.
And that's why you shouldn't drive those wide vehicles into garages.
Yeah, fair.
All right. Well, you guys, though, long story, but you guys spent a long time in regular conversations with our good friend Jim Mattea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jim was the first president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association, long time car reviewer for the Chicago Tribune, and at a moment in time, the most syndicated guy, I think, in America, not just cars.
Yep.
He was like in every Sunday news section.
He was a great writer, too.
He was funny.
He was funny. He was funny to interview, too, because he was with the Chicago Tribune. We were in the Tribune Tower for 20-something years. And Laura Wacker is where Jim would park. And as he would walk up the stairs, it would be the beginning of his day, but it always looked like he was the morning after the night before. He was just dragging himself in. And if you stopped him...
He looked kind of like a disheveled Columbo.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're starting disheveled. And, and you're adding a level of dishevelment. Yeah.
And then if you said something to him about the vehicle that he was driving, invariably he would say... Not enough cup holders. I'm driving from Gurnee. There's not enough cup holders. And so he claimed that he was solely responsible for multiple cup holders being put in vehicles because of his constant complaint.
In the Dodge Caravan?
Yes.
Remember? In minivans.
There were like 12 cup holders in the caravan, and he said, yes, I did that.
So Jim is responsible for the cup holders. I'm responsible for the emergency release latch and trunks and underfloor storage.
Yes, you are.
And stuff like that.
In case you ever get locked in there.
Yeah.
Right?
Because, hashtag girl in the trunk.
Yes.
So, but, Jim was great.
I had my days in the trunk when I used to do the television show for the Chicago Auto Show.
Okay.
And so they would invariably have me in some fabulous evening gown, and they'd say, now, at 5'10", we want you to climb in that trunk. I go, really? I'm wearing an evening gown. Yeah, but it'll look good.
But my favorite Chicago Auto Show, Johnny was dressed to the nines in a...
Bob Mackie.
A gorgeous Bob Mackie dress.
It was over $2,000 for that dress.
And they didn't want her to sit down because...
No. You would leave a butt mark.
So during the breaks for the auto show, Johnny would just come over and lean up against me.
Because we would actually record the show. It could be a 14 to 16 hour day for the auto show broadcast. Now it's done live, which is wonderful. But we would do take after take. An engineer would walk by, or some guy rolling out carpet would walk. Oh, we've got to do that again. Get back in the trunk.
Here's the good news for people. Most of that stuff is available on YouTube.
I know.
Yes.
Terrifying. The only good thing was the dresses.
So we've seen that. But Jim Matea, did get you guys into cars.
He did, yes.
So you guys, like us, have driven them professionally, and then you guys have had some pretty cool cars that you've owned.
Yes. Thankfully, Jim Matea said to us one time, there are not enough women, Jill, you know this, talking about cars. Mm-hmm. And so he would take us out on a few of his road tests, and he would turn to me.
I believe it was back when we were on WIND, I did the first radio road test with Jim Matea, and we just recorded what we were doing. We went over to McCormick Place, and he was driving something around, and we recorded it. And then we started doing that on a more regular basis. And when you and I started hanging out together, he said, you really should.
Yep. Yeah. He scared me to death, though, because, we would be doing audio taping, and he would start pounding on the vehicle to show, look at the Saturn. I'll never forget the Saturn. I thought, we're going to own a Saturn by the time he's done. He's beating it up. Look, it just pops right back.
Oh, I remember those. So I used to have a Saturn, and I loved those doors where it was like plastic, and it would just...
Yes.
At the dealerships for Saturns, they had a door panel on the wall and a rubber mallet on a string, on a rope that you were supposed to just freely pick up and whack on the door. And over time, the luster on the thing had started to fade, but it did, in fact, take a brutal beating. And kids at a dealership,
they
would just get up there and start mercilessly pounding.
Our producer at that time was dating a girl, and he confided in us that he thought he was going to have to break up with her because she was driving a Hootie-mobile. And we said, a Hootie? He goes, one of those Saturns.
Oh.
He called the Saturn the Hootie-mobile, as in Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh.
What? That actually sounds demographically correct.
Yes. And he did break up with her, too.
Oh. Wow. I hadn't thought about why Saturn fell out of favor with the public, but...
Now you know.
Now I know. Yeah. Hootie. That's hilarious. But because of Jim, you guys moved into driving test cars, too.
We did, yes.
And you've had some fun cars. So I thought we'd talk a little bit today about some of the cars that made the biggest impressions or you enjoyed the most. I've got a short list of two. I know Jill's got a couple, but let's start with you guys.
Well, do we want to start with the car that we were pulled over as we were driving? Because we would be coming in late at night.
Uh-huh.
So there we are, the express lanes on the Kennedy, completely empty. Okay. Dodge Charger.
Oh.
Hemi. Okay. Nobody's around. We stop. I look around. Nobody's around. I floor it.
Mm.
And we were doing a very close to a triple-digit number when all of a sudden, and we're pulled over. And he was so nice. He wanted to take a look at the car. And he gave me a warning. He said, okay, if you don't get any tickets in the next couple of months, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just a car fan. And that also happened The first time we drove a car with night vision.
Yes, I was pulled over on Christmas morning. Oh. I was running out to the grocery store on Christmas morning because I couldn't find our potatoes. And I was like, we have to have potatoes. And there was no traffic, and I got pulled over by a police officer. And he leans into the car. He said, I just wanted to see that night vision screen. Well, thank you. I just died.
What were you driving?
This was a Cadillac. Probably a 2001.
It was one of the first Cadillac DeVille GTS.
Yeah, the Raytheon system.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, very expensive.
He's leaning in the car like, well, oh, wow. And I'm thinking, oh, my heart.
but one of the, you want to hear a memorable Hummer.
Mm. Yes.
When we're trying to get, because of an accident, we're trying to get from the left lane on the Kennedy into the next to the left lane. Johnny literally had to lean out the window with her hands in the, please let me, because people have attitude about Hummer. They would not let us get in the lane.
That's when you're like, I'm bigger than you are and I'm coming over. You can either move or not move, but I will be in this lane.
That was a tragically bad vehicle. The Hummer H2, especially the first version.
The first version, because
it was slow too.
It was lumbering. There was
claustrophobic.
Oh my gosh! The windows were so small, and then you hear this rattle in the back, and it was the latches for you to latch down your gurney. So when you've got a body on the gurney and you need to latch it down in the back of your, I'm like, why are we in this?
See, I remember later driving the Hummer H3, and I forget what they called the V8 version. There was another tag there, but that was the compact version of the Hummer, and it was much more sensible. It still looked like a Hummer, but it was an appropriate amount of weight and size, and that was a nice vehicle, and it was powered by the 5.3-liter V8, which is very smooth. Nice vehicle, still about 15 miles per gallon, which is the kind of thing that upsets people. And I think I told you guys this story offline, but Damon Bell, our editor Damon Bell at Consumer Guide, who was co-host of the podcast for a number of years, had parked the H3 outside of a Starbucks. When he got out, he found a note under the windshield wiper that said, guys who drive Hummers make war in the Middle East necessary. He's like,
whoa. It's like, love you too.
Yeah. Yeah. But we should talk good cars.
Yes. Yes. Well, we've had a few that had questionable gas mileage. Yours in particular, the boats that you love so dearly.
Well, I used to have a 75 Imperial LeBaron Crown Coupe. Thank you very much. With the big Hemi 444 barrel. And during the gas crunch, I got rid of it because going downhill on a good day, it got about 13 miles per gallon.
That was kind of the end of the line for anything that was a real Imperial.
Yeah.
Although I think that was branded. This gets very confusing. If you get this wrong, they segued that into
the New Yorker.
Yeah. It was New Yorker Imperial. Sometimes it was Chrysler Imperial. Sometimes it was Imperial by itself. And if you get it wrong, old guys will send you letters.
And what is that email address?
We don't have it. Car stuff at consumerguide.com.
Yes.
But I had a car I drove years and years ago when I first started at Consumer Guide around 2004. I've got the years here that it might have been. So they built this car between 1998 and 2005, and this was a particular generation of the Mercedes S-Class. And I don't know why we got this as a test car, especially as a Mercedes, because it was extremely lightly equipped. Didn't have heated seats, for example. Mm-hmm. And this is a flagship Mercedes. And it had the base engine, the 4.3-liter V8. But it also didn't have any chassis upgrades, no AMG wheels and tires, no sports suspension. And it was perhaps the nicest riding vehicle I ever drove. And it ended up driving from our offices in Morton Grove to a meeting out in, where are Mama meetings?
Oak Brook,
Illinois. Thank you. And it was like one of the nicest rides I ever took. The most compliant suspension ever. Mm. Just, this is exactly what a German luxury car should be. Mm. And it was quick, and it was silent, and it was incredibly refined. What a great car. Also, funny thing about that car, it was like $60,000 on the window sticker.
Yeah.
That car's $120,000, $130,000 now.
Yep.
Wow.
Fantastic car.
So speaking of 2004, one of the vehicles on my list was the Volkswagen Phaeton.
Oh, kind of a similar concept.
Yeah.
Nothing sporty there.
No, and I had the one with the W12 engine, and I remember driving down to Indianapolis to visit my sister, and that's a 3-hour drive normally, And it was one of those vehicles that you just went fast and you just didn't realize how fast you were going. And so I really wasn't paying attention. And I got home and I called my sister to let her know that I got home. And she's like, "You did not get home already." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "It has only been 2.5 hours." And I was like, "Oh.
Oops.
Oh. Oops."
Yeah, but, and for people who don't remember the Phaeton, this was a very large car. It was bigger than the Audi A8.
Yeah.
And it was
beautiful car.
Yeah, mechanically related to the Bentley Continental, which was an interesting thing. But yeah, that 12 was a honey.
I mean, it was such an amazing car. And I mean, I couldn't believe Volkswagen built it. It should never have been a Volkswagen. But it was just, it was amazing.
Also, it was profoundly expensive when they launched it.
Oh, yeah.
It was like $112,000 in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And we're more brand conscious in the U.S., so that was a tougher sell here than it would have been in Europe.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask, what kind of gas mileage did you get with that?
I don't even remember. I didn't have to stop on the way back from Indianapolis, but I probably did have to fill it up at least once.
But that engine went on in Bentley's. It was just discontinued.
Yeah. That W12 engine was just phenomenal.
If you ever want to be confused, and they're available on YouTube, look for like a video on the W12 because it is the most ridiculous collection of split Vs. And it's not a W. It's more like two Ws. It's impossible to figure out how this works.
Yeah.
Engineers must have just decided to give up on their lives while trying to design this thing.
Probably. But it was one of those cars that it was comfortable for me at 4'11". And I had a friend who was like 6'7", who was able to get into it. And he was just like, "I want this car. It's $110,000. I do not want this car." But, I mean, it was great for tall people, too.
They're reliability disasters.
Yeah.
They are available used super cheap because they are reliability disasters, especially the 12s.
Yeah.
They would make a six-cylinder version briefly. I don't know what came of that.
Yeah, so it looks like, according to Car Gurus, the current price for 2004, and this is just for the V8, is $13,000.
That's almost more than maybe I would want to invest. But that doesn't seem like a bad deal. Like, if you can burn $13,000, maybe, because you may not be able to fix it.
No, that is true. I was looking to see if there was any other listings on here, but yeah, so no.
There you go.
Yep.
What was your favorite test car, do you think?
Ooh, favorite test car.
I loved and would take one in a heartbeat, the Pacifica.
Oh, yes.
I was so impressed with that.
The Pacifica
vehicle.
Hybrid?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. That's a great vehicle.
I thought it was good looking. It was so easy to get in and out of.
Great gas mileage.
I used it for gardening, and I just loaded up the back. Because I've always said, you know, in a perfect world, I would have a pickup truck just so I could take it to the garden center. You know, 2 months out of the year, I could use it. But this was it was a beautiful vehicle, and I think gas mileage was really impressive.
Oh, incredible gas mileage.
Yeah, it just worked beautifully, flawlessly.
We drove one, not a hybrid, a few years ago, many years ago now, from Chicago to Colorado to visit my wife's brother-in-law and his wife. And it's just a family vacation. 1,000 miles each way. What a great highway car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it does a couple things you really want a highway car to do. It's quiet on the road, and it rides incredibly well. And then the seats are great. Yeah, I never really think about seat comfort, but yeah, the seats are great in this car.
I always think about seat comfort.
I do too.
Well, I mean, do you guys drive when you go down south at
frequently,
all?
Frequently, yeah.
So, I mean, when you're spending any amount of time in the vehicle, and every other weekend I'm driving down to Indianapolis, and it's just like, if I can get out of the car and my butt doesn't hurt, that is a happy day.
Well, that was our biggest problem with Mercedes. We always felt like there was not enough cush in the seat. They were just very sporty, kind of hard. And they would say, "Well, those are the European seats." Well, I need a little bit more comfort in my European seat.
Yeah. And if you're not comfortable with the seat, they are not going to get any more comfortable.
Always said that. When you get in it, that's it.
We may have told you for a long time, we were looking for a Lincoln Aviator. And we tried umpteen of them with the 30-way seats.
Mm-hmm.
We could never find a comfortable seat.
30 ways.
That's almost Rubik's Cube like, though.
It is. And then the crazy thing is, as soon as you give it to a valet parking, you get back, you're like, "What happened to the 30 ways I had my seat adjusted?"
Yeah. That is true. Yeah. I will say I've had good luck with the 30-way adjustable seats.
Have you?
Because I'm so like small, I can adjust the side bolsters to kind of actually touch my rib cage, and I don't get that in a lot of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So I had good luck with the Aviator, Nautilus, you know, the Corsair, the Lincoln. Perfect. Is it perfect placement? Perfect adjustment seats.
Because we tried every one of those, so they didn't all have.
We went to about five different dealerships. I mean, we really, really, really wanted one and just couldn't get comfortable.
Because that's a nice car.
It is.
And beautiful.
A new Nautilus, too. We're probably not giving enough kudos to Lincoln these days, but everything they sell is pretty good.
Yeah.
That new Nautilus is great.
Yeah, I love the screen.
And it's funny, too, the new Nautilus, the only Ford sold here that was built in China.
Yeah.
It may not be sold here long.
That is true.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Oh, man. So I've got a worse car here, too, to share with you guys, and I wonder if anyone remembers it. But Volvo briefly sold the S40. It was called the S40, and they would sell versions of the S40 later. But this is a car that was built in conjunction with Mitsubishi in the Netherlands by a company called Nedcar. And there's a lot of confusing stuff here that isn't very Swedish. But they sold this car between 1996 and 2004. And it had this terrible engine that turns out, I think it was Mitsubishi sourced. It was a 1.9 liter turbocharged engine. It was only front drive. And this car was a sloppy disaster.
Okay.
It was a test car, and I don't know what years, but it was built between 96 and 2004. So we probably got one right at the end of that run that I would have driven because I started a consumer guide in 2002. But it was loud. It was unpleasant. The power delivery was terrible. And I could not believe that Volvo sold this car in the U.S. as a Volvo. But easily the worst test car I ever drove.
Not the Dodge Nitro?
Nitro was bad.
But
and if people don't remember the Nitro, it was just this Dodge version of the Jeep Patriot.
Yeah.
And it had this body on frame construction, but it wasn't actually good off-road. Mm-mm. So you're paying the price for this heavy architecture and this crummy, lumpy V6, and there was no benefit to it, except that it kind of looked cool in some trim levels. Was that your pick?
For a worse vehicle?
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely one of them.
Yeah. Do you guys have a worse test car?
Worst one?
I think we got lucky. I don't remember ever saying, oh gosh, I hate to review this vehicle because I really despise it. And we usually would spend, when we were road testing a vehicle, a week, maybe 10 days, driving it around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think of a worst one. I can think of a surprisingly worst functioning thing. The BMW, their iDrive system.
Oh. The initial iDrive system was confounding.
It was crazy.
I hated that.
Yeah. It's better now. Okay. But it was confounding.
Well, it couldn't
at the beginning.
Go worse.
No.
And for people who don't remember, the heart of iDrive was a giant rotary knob that did not do anything that you would expect a rotary knob to do. Like if you were going to slide through AM radio stations, you know, wherever they start, 540, something like that, at the bottom of the line, and you need to get up to 1380 or something like that, you couldn't turn that big knob.
Mm-mm.
That big knob would get you to a screen where you would enter the numbers that you wanted.
So as you're driving, you're supposed to be doing...
Like, this is the dumbest application of a giant... You think you could just use it to rotate?
Spin it.
You know, like in a 56 Chevy, you would press a button for presets. Nothing like... It wasn't that easy.
And this from the company whose slogan was the ultimate driving machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as long as you don't need the infotainment.
You could not keep your eyes on the road while trying to work this iDrive system.
Man, they stuck with that, though, and they still call the system they have now iDrive.
They do. And, I mean, it is better. I mean, I don't...
It's way better.
It is a lot better, but, the initial systems were just like, what?
Yeah.
Not intuitive.
It's always weird because BMW, historically, is always kind of pushing its luck and trying to push its buyers and its audience into things. Like, there were years in the mid-90s into the early aughts before they were redesigned where they were building perhaps the best-looking new cars out there. And then they went to this strange angular stuff where they called it side flaming.
Yeah.
And there was something called the bangle butt, which was the really higher. Bangle was a designer, and the trunk was really high. And they were very strange looking.
You wonder how Bangle felt about that.
I don't know.
Bangle butt.
Yeah. But they were just always pushing their luck with stuff like that, and interior design too. And yeah. ultimately, I think we came around.
I don't know. I think Jim Mattea had an effect on them because mm-hmm. they do have cup holders now. Because initially they didn't have cup holders either.
Germans yes. don't do cup holders.
No, they do not.
No, and they hate us for doing cup holders. You know what Germans do is smoke.
Yeah.
So you get a real ashtray.
Yeah, you always get that.
And the lighter.
In fact, there's some great video of the 2002, which was the BMW predecessor to the 3 Series from what, the late 60s, early 70s. Test drive video. It's like they're like lengthy commercials.
Okay.
And the guys driving them are smoking, you know.
Oh, of course.
I keep both hands on the wheel, but no, they're one hand's on a Marlboro.
Well, I still remember getting test cars that had smoke in them.
Yes.
Like somebody had
yes.
smoked in them previously.
Yep.
Yeah. And you don't get that anymore, but like when That's I first true. Started, there, you know, you'd get a test car and I'd be like, I'm just going to drive with windows down this week.
Locally, we can name both guys that were doing that.
That is true.
Yes.
That is true.
I know exactly.
Well, I know at least one of them. Yeah. So, yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
And I have memories of being a smoker and driving my big Grand Prix, 78 Grand Prix, mm-hmm. driving along, and then a hot ash falls in your lap.
Oh.
And you're driving this big vehicle, and you're, oh, okay.
Oh, man. You know what? We have to go to the quiz. But before we do that, you guys should talk about your book.
Oh, well.
If you're a fan of Les Paul, Les Paul was a dear friend of ours, and we wrote a book called A Little More Les, which is a lot of our memories and conversations with Les.
Transcripts of actual conversations mm-hmm. that we had with him. And the fun thing is a conversation can go on for pages and pages, and you think, oh, it sounds an awful lot like he lost his way. But no, he always came back to where he started. It was just an amazing conversation.
For people who don't know about Les Paul, and I didn't know that much until I started just sort of exploring, but he was really experimental with his music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and Mary Ford, his wife, was equally experimental yep. and really interesting vocal talent.
Yes. Oh,
so,
gosh.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with Les Paul, listen to some.
If it wasn't for Les Paul, the recording industry as we know it today would not exist.
That's amazing, but totally believable. That's yeah. insane. So you guys are sticking around for the quiz?
Oh, yes. Okay.
All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back...
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Did you know the Chicago Auto Show offers much more than just cars? Every year, there's something new to experience, and 2025 is no different. This year, take a thrilling ride on one of two indoor mountain climbs with either Ford or Jeep, and decide who conquers the challenge best. Come experience the latest electrified vehicles on two indoor tracks where you'll feel the power and performance. Take a trip into the national parks and adopt a dog with Subaru. Dream about a lavish lifestyle at the Supercar Gallery. Get behind the wheel to test drive vehicles on city streets. And don't miss new exhibits at the show like Overlanding Chicago or the Family Zone. Join us for an indoor run, craft beer tasting, career day, and so much more. It's an experience you won't forget. The Chicago Auto Show, February 8th through the 17th at McCormick Place. Find out more and buy tickets online at chicagoautoshow.com. The Chicago Auto Show. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. And they are Steve and Johnny. Thanks for sticking around.
Sure.
It's quiz time, but real quick. It's never quick. But
it'll be quick.
All right.
You can find me on pretty much every social media that exists at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag Car du Jour.
And how can we find you guys?
At steveandjohnny.com. That's JOHNNIE.com. And on WGN Radio.
And we're on Blue Sky and
Facebook.
And just about every social media thing you can think of.
Absolutely.
All right. Easy to find, Steve and Johnny.
Yes.
If you just search Steve and Johnny,
mm-hmm.
you'll find the stuff.
Yes.
All right. It's quiz time. Today's quiz topic is, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Fake Fords.
I'm totally going to fail at this.
I'm going to give you two models. You have to tell me which one was never a Ford. It's that easy.
It is never that easy.
It's that easy. Johnny, we'll start with you.
Oh, no. Okay.
Johnny, I'm going to give you two Fords. Are you ready? One of them is fake. The Puma or the Prancer?
The Puma.
Is fake?
Mm-hmm.
Steve?
Prancer.
I'm going with Prancer.
You two are correct.
Uh-huh.
The Puma is the real car.
Okay.
All right, let me, I got to do this here.
They're my favorite shoes,
Jill,
but it's a
Steve, Johnny, Jill and Steve have 1 point. Okay.
What was there, an AMC Prancer at one point?
Pacer.
Yeah, I know Pacer, but...
I don't remember a Prancer.
On Prancer, on Dancer, on...
Vixen.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Steve, we'll start with you. One of these is a fake Ford, the F-Max or the J-Max?
Ooh. Sneaky question. I'll say F-Max.
Is fake?
Yeah.
Jill, this question goes to you.
I'm going to say J-Max.
Is fake?
Fake.
J-Max.
You two are correct. The J-Max is fake. The F-Max is a full-size truck sold in Europe, built in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Jill, you have 2 points.
Woo!
Steve and Johnny both have one. We go to the third question. Jill,
actually,
you start
together,
on this
we
one.
Have, we
I
have 2 points
recount.
Together.
It's fixed.
What's that?
Together we have 2 points.
You do. Together you do. Yes, that's correct. Jill.
Okay.
Which is fake, the Model TT or the Model XX? Model TT
or XX?
Model XX. One of those is fake.
I'm going to say XX.
Is fake?
Yes.
All right.
TT.
TT?
XX.
The XX is fake. Jill gets a point and Steve gets a point. It is now Jill with 3.
Wow.
You have not lost, you've not gotten a question wrong this year.
I have not.
Yep. Steve has 2. Johnny has 1. We go to the fourth question. We didn't talk about the rules. There are 5 questions in the quiz. If we end with a tie, there's a bonus question, but we always do the bonus question.
Yes, but the good news is, so like when I'm by myself, if I get 3, I win, in which case I would have already won today.
That's true.
But now I have people that I'm playing against.
But you have competition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're back to Johnny. Johnny, which one of these models is not a real Ford? The Rio Grande or the Del Rio? Rio Grande or Del Rio?
Del Rio.
Is fake?
Fake.
Del Rio.
Now the pressure's on. I'm going to get this one wrong, I think. Because I disagree with you guys. I think it's the first one is the fake.
You think Rio Grande?
Rio Grande?
Yeah.
Go with your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the silence is funnier if there's music.
I know. Okay. Oh. I got it wrong, didn't I?
No. Did you pick something?
Yeah, I said the first one.
The Rio Grande?
Yeah.
That is the fake.
Oh!
You're still perfect for the year.
1,000.
Yeah,
wow.
The Del Rio was a 2-door wagon sold between 1957 and 1958.
That's a good name, though.
Yeah, it is. And the Rio Grande is that river or something.
Mm-hmm. Something.
All right. We've got one more question in the regular questions. To Steve. Steve, which is the fake Ford, the Elite or the Excalibur?
Excalibur.
Jill?
I'm going to say Elite.
Excalibur.
That's your first wrong.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. So, Jill, you have one. It was 4-3-2.
Okay. Mm.
But we're going to the bonus question because that's what we do, and it goes to you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I recently did a fun article or blog post about the 1978 Dodge D100 pickup. And the first line of the ad, which had nothing to do with the ad or the content of the ad, was, Dodge loves trucks as much as America loves jeans. But this was 78, and we were super into jeans in the U.S., and I've got 4 stores here that in 1978 exclusively sold jeans. One of them is fake. The rest are real. Are you
in
ready?
In 1978, that exclusively sold jeans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They expanded, but that was their marketing focus.
But in 1978, they only sold jeans.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Gap, by the way, kicked in 1969. I'm not doing the Gap because they're still around, too.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Got to tell me the fake store.
Okay.
County Seat, Just Pants, Just Jeans, or Uncle Denim's House of Pants?
I'm going with Uncle Denim's House of Pants.
Are you?
Yes.
All right, Johnny?
I'm going with Just Jeans.
Just Jeans?
I'm going with Uncle Denim.
Yeah, Uncle Denim was fake. I giggled when I wrote it.
But there used to be an Uncle Dan's House of Jeans.
Was there?
Yeah.
I had a hard time tracking down these old stores, but I found an ad for Just Jeans, which is wacky.
Yes.
And County Seat, of course, and Just Pants were around for a long time.
Sure.
And then there was Just Pants and More. From a, that's just, the dumbest name
and
ever.
And more.
And more.
And more.
Socks.
A Scoshmore?
Yeah.
That was another term that they used in jean ads.
What was that? What was the Scosh?
A little bit more room in the butt. A Scosh.
For guys.
Yes, a Scosh. But
was that Wrangler jeans?
And I think they might have been a little bit of elasticity in the denim so that you could bend over and they would give you a Scoshmore room.
Not a lot, just a Scosh.
A Scosh. Yeah.
It was a Scoshmore
room. I actually love that word.
I remember just that. I got to find that ad now. We need to share that.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, Uncle Denim, not a real thing. Should have been. Mm-hmm. Also, the ad, I'm going to run this. I'm going to share this ad on Facebook, I think, because the Just Jeans ad is wacky.
Okay.
It's three guys in a pickup truck that decide they need to pick up their look. And though this is denim, they've got all these weird colors.
Sure.
So he bought like a...
a great period for clothes. Come on.
If you watch this ad, you might not think so.
I was there. I was wearing those clothes. I'm old enough that I actually had to buy men's jeans because they didn't make women's jeans.
Hmm.
Wrap your mind around that one.
What I remember from being a kid in like 7th and 8th grade and into high school was the scandal of Levi's prices. Because somewhere around the time when I hit 7th or 8th grade, so this is like 1979, 1980, something in there, Levi's became incredibly popular.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they experienced this crazy resurgence and the quality was good and they were nice looking.
And Asian markets embraced them.
Yeah.
So that drove the price up too.
So a crazy thing happened and Levi's jeans became $20, which was heresy. And there were plenty of parents, especially at St. Teresa, where their kids were not getting $20 jeans. So do you remember what JCPenney sold?
Did they sell $19.99 jeans or whatever?
I think they were like $14.
$14.
Okay.
Yeah, but they were plain pockets. JCPenney's plain pockets, and they didn't have stitching on the back. And that was like a national campaign.
Yeah.
And it seemed like everyone I knew that went to St. Teresa for grade school had plain pockets.
Not a Jordache to be found? Remember
some Jordache? And Chic, or was it Chic or Chic?
Chic.
Yeah, but I don't remember Jordache. Those were crazy. But yeah, that was some stuff.
Like cars, those things are very collectible now, believe it or not. Have you got your old Levi's? There's a number in there that tells you how old they are.
And what was the AM, again, I'm going with AMC, the Levi's model of the... Was it the Rambler or what was it?
It had denim seats and had a pocket in the back and had brads around the pocket.
That began in 71 or 3. I can't remember which, but it was first in the Gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Levi's interior. And
very
it was
cool.
Extra cost and it was cool.
Yeah.
And the buttons in it were like the brass buttons.
Yes.
And then on the side, there was the orange red Levi tag.
And didn't they even have a thing on the dash? A kind of a Levi's logo or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but I remember I owned a 1978 Jeep CJ7. So the off-road vehicle, the CJ7, the predecessor to the Wrangler, that had the Levi interior.
Really?
Now the thing that I bought was so beat up you almost couldn't tell, and because it was indoor-outdoor interior, it wasn't actually cotton or denim. It was like vinyl, but it looked cheapy. But you could see the tag. You could see the remains of what this vehicle was supposed to be.
Sounds awful.
The whole vehicle was kind of awful, and I loved it. But the floor in the front rusted through. So my dad got a hold of a piece of...
Yes.
Like a cafeteria tray size piece of stainless steel that he just kind of got riveted in there.
Oh, God.
And that was the floor of my car.
That was not uncommon. My mother actually carpooled with a man. And she'd say, I have to hold my feet up while we're driving because there's a hole in the floor.
Oh.
And she actually paid this man to ride in the car with holding her feet up.
Frank Pyler, you guys know Frank.
Sure.
And he was the second ever publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and is still the publisher of Collectible Automobile Magazine. Talks about the days when he sold cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what period of time he was selling Chevys. But he said if you stood around in the showroom and everyone was quiet, you could hear the Vegas rust.
Yeah.
But that was such a disaster because the Vega was actually like premium priced and was supposed to be high tech and had all this rust proofing technology, but it all failed miserably. Like it didn't, like it worked in theory and then in application it didn't, and it just became a disaster. And they changed the name pretty quickly to Monza. It like went like 5 model years, and then they had to get rid of it because it was so cursed by its legend for rusting and for the heads melting. But speaking of which, what was the first test car you guys drove?
Ooh, the very first one?
Gosh, I mean, you're talking almost 30 years ago.
Because it was around, 1986-ish or 7, something like that.
So I have no idea. Suddenly, though, when Weird Cars, I flashed on the car that we disagreed on. You love the Aztec. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't even want to be seen in that vehicle. And Steve would go, but it's so cool. No, I don't want to drive it. I don't want to be seen in it.
But I remember one of the early cars we tested, it was the Buick that the bomb squad came down when we were...
Oh, yes, with the propane tank. That was one of the first vehicles that we road tested. We had a propane tank in the trunk.
What's his name? I'm forgetting his name.
Tom Beeman.
Tom Beeman.
Oh,
and
Tom
he
Beeman.
Took us,
sure.
He took
friend
us
of the
over
show.
To this over yes. to this garage where we were
downtown.
He popped the trunk to show us. And on security, they're seeing this thing,
oh,
and
no.
all of a sudden, we have a whole bunch of people around and say, what's going on
and
here?
Thank goodness he was with us, because he was walking us around it. But imagine on camera what that looks like. Three people walking around the vehicle, the trunk is up, and this big propane tank is in the trunk.
So this was a propane-powered Buick.
It was.
I can't even imagine what that was. Interesting.
Yes, it was weird.
We had an editor who was desperate to drive a natural gas-powered vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one for a while that Honda was doing in the last 20 years, before the Great Recession, so like 2005-ish.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Civic CNG, compressed natural gas vehicle.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And somehow, some way, this editor got this vehicle from Detroit to Chicago. But it wasn't easy. And he had to knock on doors of private industry and like, I need some I need some compressed natural. Like, there was no retail network to support that. So that was crazy. But yeah, there hasn't been a lot of that out there. There was a propane-powered Ram that was in the fleet once a long time ago that Frank Pilar drove. But that didn't get around.
And the Buick we were in was like a big four-door.
I want to say it was a LeSabre.
Yeah, it was a big vehicle.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
With no room for groceries or luggage.
Usually if you went to Vegas and got into a Crown Victoria, those were powered by propane.
Oh, really?
And it ate up a lot of the trunk space.
Yeah.
Because all that stuff has to be stored in tanks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They can't be square because it's so high pressure. All right. Well, guess what we did?
We talked too much.
We did. It was a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much
for
coming here.
Yes, this
Thanks
is
for
awesome.
Asking us.
Yeah, it was great having you. So thank you to Steve and Johnny. Thank you to producer Randy. Thank you, Jill. And let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.